the Vision Reactors show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So I will beginning a new 5-week council dream news, meaning the news is a dream, and also let's dream it. You can find out more about that at coyotenetworknews.com. It begins July 18th at 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. So here we are, Dark O' Moon, Good Trouble Radio, when sane, reverent beings gather to guide culture to ingenious, sane reverence. And therefore, we are welcoming Jamie Yeager, whose vision as a public dreamer, the Sabian symbol, is coal miners emerging from a deep pit into sunlight. Yes, he's born at the dark of the moon, as am I, and what it be now, whose Aries mission is illuminating what is hidden, that we may animate the soul of democracy dedicated to collective well-being. Jamie Yeager is a lifelong Texas liberal, was press secretary for Senator Eugene McCarthy's independent presidential campaign in 1976. That's when we met, and is now composting. I changed your word. I couldn't help myself. He is now composting the modern Confederates into nutrient for democracy. Welcome, Jamie.
Thank you, Caroline. Glad to be here.
That's great. Yes, I hope you don't mind. I replaced battling with composting just for the fun of it.
Oh, no, that's fine.
That's great. So, and I can't help but mention, we won't dive into it, but you taught me years ago so many things, because tomorrow is Bastille Day. And you said when Mao was asked what he thought of the French Revolution, he replied, "It's too soon to say." Anyway, I wanted to put that up there just for a long-term vision perspective because it's so fun.
Amen.
So here we are. Dark of Moon, guiding culture, good trouble. We will be honoring John Lewis at our midpoint, which is just the best thing ever, to honor democracy and everything he said in his last words, right? So that's a wonderful thing. You brought him up when we were talking yesterday too, just as, you know, a keeper of the soul of this country. Is that one way you could think of him?
Well, I do. I mean, he was central in the reconstitution of the American psyche around the rededication to the notion of justice in the same tradition as Martin Luther King, that if justice is not inclusive, it's not justice. And America shouldn't go around pretending to be, as Superman said, interested in truth, justice, and the American way, if the American way doesn't include everybody in getting justice. And that, of course, is the problem we've got again today. There's no economic justice. There's in fact, trouble accessing the alleged justice system for people with no assets. And, you know, the set of problems that we have has been made even clearer by the former guy and all of his Confederate minions. I'm glad you edited that word battling into composting, because it's much more domestic and it's much more ongoing, and it's organic. Battle isn't really a normal condition. Compost is going on all the time. Just look at the rainforest. Anyway, glad to be here.
Yes, no. I'm glad. I'm glad you approve and are playful as always. So because whatever we say, we get more battles, more struggles, more compost. You know, it's a wonderful image too. Going, there you go, you modern Confederates. There you go, turning into something useful for democracy. We love that. And then I always love Howard Zinn being the last voice, sort of before this show. You know, history. You are a wonderful provider of history and things we've often talked about, and again, as you know, you can go anywhere you want at any time. But I love you reminding us of the 1948 Democratic platform. Can you remind us of that?
Yes, in 1948, the Democratic Party, Harry Truman, and a couple of young fellows running for Congress, Eugene McCarthy in Minnesota, who knocked off the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, and John Kennedy in Massachusetts, whose machine displaced your father as a New Deal congressman. And yeah. In the 1948 platform, the Democrats pledged themselves to demilitarization, economic growth, civil rights, and public health care.
And lower military spending.
We're still fighting every one of those battles today. Go ahead.
No, sorry. And you'd also reminded us lower military spending was part of Truman's pitch, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We built up this great big army that we needed to, and now we didn't need it anymore, and let's not have it. And that didn't happen. Eisenhower, while warning of the military-industrial complex, it would have been nice if he would have done something about it, because he was about the only man in America who could have said, hey, we only need to have so many mega deaths in our arsenal, right? We don't need to kill everybody in the world several thousand times. You know, a couple of hundred times is probably enough. Anyway.
Right. No. No, you go. You always feel free to go. Yeah.
No, I'm done.
Okay, we have a slight
lag. We didn't do
a slight lag.
But we can work on that now.
Yes, exactly. No, that's right. And that's why Dark of the Moon, Backstage with John Lewis and yourself and all dedicated listeners, we're all in this Dark of the Moon council to go, how should it go? And the qualities we want to, you know, invoke, really, which you're bringing, you know, historical reference and dedication now and awareness of the danger we're all in, and then, you know, strategy as well, and playfulness. So, yeah, and nuance and complexity. So we might think we have a Dark of the Moon cauldron. The new moon will be on Monday at 2:32 p.m. Pacific time. It's got a great image, and we can all do it together now. The image for that degree is a mantle of power thrown over the right shoulder, assuming the mantle of responsibility, feeling the descent of powerful energies, heeding a call, heeding warnings, cape-like flare. I think that's fun. And also, I just learned the etymology of the word escape means to leave your cape behind. Isn't that charming?
Oh.
Anyway, I find that charming.
Yeah, how wonderful.
Yeah, it is. It's like, you know, it's like we are escapade artists, escape artists as well. So there's that, you know, again, complexity and nuance. And, well, let's, you know, and the I Ching counsels us, you know, says it's a time of dreaming, rites of passage, initiations, hidden secrets, fraud and hidden magic, staying undercover, you know, not aggressive, you know, and it says, 6 and the 5th, King Wu, great hero, is in hiding, awaiting the right time. We go, okay. And then it changes to, this is the end of normal life, clearing away obstacles. It's advantageous to step into the great stream, clear away what is blocking clarity and understanding, dispel fear and illusion, let the fog lift and the sun shine through. So that seems good counsel, yeah.
Clear away what is blocking clarity. And the specific application that you and I have been talking about that is the attempt to suborn, I think is the correct word, suborn the spiritual community with an exceedingly false prophet. In the political sense. And
right.
I was talking to a friend who's a graduate student in Eastern religion at Rice University. And he was saying, well, yeah, the spiritual community is sort of able to be attacked because so many people within it are like, well, my spiritual life means that I don't have to deal with politics. I'm doing something else. And, you know, politics is really very basic, going back to the word in Greek, polis, meaning everybody all together. And, you know, politics is about how shall we raise public money and how shall we spend public money. And in what is currently the world's largest empire, 330 million citizens, there's a lot of argument about what are we supposed to, who are we supposed to get money from on what terms, and who are we supposed to spend it on what terms. And you can't just walk away from that because it governs every aspect of our lives. So I'm very focused on the forthcoming elections, as many other people are. I mean, I get it that electoral politics is not the main thing that's going on in this world, but it is a thing that can be affected by every individual citizen with their voice and their actions and their presence. And, you know, bringing our hearts to bear on these public questions, that it's kind of our duty as citizens to show up for that, just as it's our duty as, shall I say, part of the universe, to show up for our spiritual connection. Like, it works better when you do that sense of duty, not you gotta or we're gonna bust you. It's just like, no, I'm here to participate. I need to participate, and I need to participate in my spiritual life and making it easy for other people to have theirs, and I need to participate in my public life or my life as a citizen, because that's important too. So that's kind of the context that I would want to bring in today.
That's great, because to match the Greeks giving us the word politics, they gave us the word idiot. It was idiotis, and it referred to someone who was such a dingbat that they did not participate in collective community well-being known as politics. And we go, okay. and so, you know, since we're all kind of backstage in the Dark of Moon Cauldron, you know, the power of defining things, and I'd spoken to you backstage about, you know, when getting into to spiral out of polarity when talking to the former guy supporters and stuff like that, and then going, well, what's your definition of the purpose of government? And it's like, and I do love, there was one moment where it was a former guy supporter, and we go, okay, you know, and then we just started, the magic comes in, we just started to say the purpose of government, and this man, you know, that we'd been kind of heard, we both said together, the purpose of government is to protect the commonwealth. And I go, there you go, lad, we're in accord. And he's like, oh, I surprised myself. Anyway, so that's a pretty good one to put on the table, right?
Right. Yes, yeah. It is.
What is wise?
Collectivity is the part that needs to be fostered. We don't want to repress individuality, but there's more repression of collectivity going on than there is of individuality, I think.
Right. Well, yes.
So we need to manifest collectivity, collectively. Go ahead.
Right. And I'm fond of the word communitarian, because nobody's really heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, there's no prison for the unexpected, right? So it's like, never mind communist, never mind whatever. Communitarian, it's like, oh, what's that? It's
That's
like dedicated to collective well-being. That'll do for starters as a thing. And and then, you know, let's look at history and complexity and nuance, dispelling delusion and all kinds of things, but also, you know, heeding the I Ching, saying stay slightly undercover. I do agree with some things of RFK Jr., that for which he's mocked inappropriately, that he said the 2004 election was stolen, and the 2000, and they were, right? And I think this is good to bring up, you know, because now we're going back to Roger Stone, and I'd said to you, I'd been reading around too, it's like the three people on Baby Bush's legal team in 2000 that helped engineer the stealing of that election through the Supreme Court, his three-member legal team, they are all now on the Supreme Court. It's John Roberts, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett, or as somebody says, Amy Phony Parrott. And it's like they were there in 2000 doing sneaky stuff, planning. Some of them are young, you know, for 23 years ahead. It's like, oh, my goodness. So, you know, and it was Roger Stone and that whole cast of characters who have not gone away. In aspiring to spiral out of polarity, but in the social media realm, and I go, you know, okay, RFK Jr., you know that the 2004 election was dirty tricked, but you're kind of hanging out in that sketchy financial neighborhood of those same people, and they play rough. I will aspire to find the completely credible sources for this narration, for this narrative, but there was an IT guy who really did know how to cook the election votes, and but he was in it for principle as a deep Catholic. He just wanted to stop abortion. And then he felt that he'd gotten too tight with unsavory, not principled people. And he was subpoenaed to testify about election shenanigans, and the weekend before, his plane was sabotaged and he died. It's like, these guys play rough. And so we want everybody to be safe. We want everybody to be safe. And we just say to the RFK Jr. part of our team, we want you to be safe, right? And that you're safe from those people as well, more likely to be dangerous than, you know, the CIA, although it's complex, right? We're bringing up things that are worthy of conversation in a non-polarity fashion. That's kind of the thing. We'd mentioned backstage, wondering about the CIA, Big Pharma. It's complex, and also that, one thing that he's mocked for too is saying mass shootings are related to antidepressants. I think that's true. I was talking to Carl Prebrum, great consort of my friend Catherine Neville, now an ancestor, one of the world's foremost brain scientists. And I said, Carl, I do not know science, but but I track school shootings, and there's a lot of video, and then there's a lot of, Prozac-like things, and I think it dissolves the screen between video and reality and goes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So I think these are useful things about which to convene a council, and to find, nuggets of usefulness. I mean, the 2000 and 2004 election, is there anything that you want to bring forth about those and the neighborhood of those people now being, operatives?
Well, Roger Stone goes back to 1968. He was Nixon's dirty tricksters. I want to, one thing, clarifying remark I want to quote is from you, and it goes, advertising is the toxic mimic of poetry. And the advertising world began to dominate presidential politics with the election of 1968, general election. And that bloodline in the Republican Party of deception, chicanery, trickery, not trickster sense trickery, but outright dirty tricks, I won't say it was injected into the Republican Party at that time, but it began to pretty much run the show at that time. And so a number of subsequent elections were tainted in various ways. The 68 election was tainted by collusion between Richard Nixon, Henry Kissinger, and the North Vietnamese. So was the 1972 election. There are stories to be told about each subsequent election. 2000 was clearly stolen by the Supreme Court. They didn't even need those three guys on the Supreme Court to start stealing presidential elections. Republicans won exactly one popular vote in elections since the year 2000, and that's 2004, and that's in dispute whether they actually won that election or not. So
right.
they backed themselves into the position of, we've got to steal it in order to win. And if you follow the Watergate injunction of follow the money, who is it that's providing money to RFK Jr.? It's Roger Stone. It's Steve Bannon. It's the various shadowy billionaires who own various shadowy Supreme Court justices. That's where all that money is coming from. And it's got the clear intention of trying to peel off a natural Democratic constituency, which is the people who have good hearts and active spiritual lives, but don't follow the minutiae of political maneuvering, and peel off their votes and suppress the Democratic portion of those votes by getting a large enough number of people to vote for a throwaway candidacy that is sustained by Republican money. And the model for this was Marianne Williamson last time, and I forget what her name was in 16. I think it was Stein. That was the recipient of that kind of money and was given that as part of the marketing arm of the Republican Party. And so there's, you know, toxic advertising, toxic marketing. And the Republicans know they can't win a direct election where everybody votes, so they do voter suppression, and they do this kind of psychological warfare technique on parts of the Democratic coalition to try and suppress the ultimate Democratic vote. And so that's where I think we are today.
Yes. And then just let's include the 1980 election, just, you know, and then come back to, excuse me, all that you just said. So in 1980,
I Ayatollah, right.
Right. Yeah, and that was Mark Shields and me and Terry Smith had a once-a-week gig on Fox in 1980, handicapping the presidential campaign, you know, again, when it was, again, still imprisoned as a horse race. They were very wonderfully kind to me. But we were tracking, you know, and it was interesting, you know, because I said, you know, Ted Kennedy announced on a Void of Course Moon, which means he doesn't really want this, you know, and his staff actually called me up going, how'd you know? That's really true. But then we were tracking, right, that the Reagan team, the Dirty Tricks team, got in charge, in touch with the Ayatollah to arrange for the American hostages to not be released, you know, until after the election. And then, in fact, I think it was on the day of Reagan's inauguration. So it's like, there's all kinds of nefarious things. You know, and I think in the American soul, the American soul that we aspire backstage in the dark of the moon to heal has been confused about the distinction between the con man and the liberating trickster. And for me, one yes. A good example is the movie, the whatever it is, the remarkable, the something Mr. Ridley is about a con man. It's a remake of an incredible French noir film that's like, oh my God. And the French version is so deeply satisfying because it's the con, like, oh my God. And then this fantastic comeuppance at the end in which he's, you know, hoist on his own petard. He has laid the groundwork for his getting caught. And it's like, oh, deeply wonderful. In the American version, the con doesn't get caught. Because America's confused, it kind of roots for the con. That's part of the former guy's allure, right? It's like, so we just want to put some, you know, vetting standards on the table for us all, you know, to ruminate on, going, you know, everything can be liberating or imprisoning. You know, we're going for the liberating part. We're going right. for accountability, right?
Yes.
So the yeah. And so the French version, I think it's called Purple Noon. I'm tempted to rewatch it again. You know, is very big on accountability.
Yes, I got to write that down. That sounds fantastic.
Oh, it's deeply fantastic. It's like, oh my God. You know, it's again the con and the comeuppance and the accountability, deeply satisfying, which is what the American version
right.
didn't have, and what we really want.
Because yeah.
should we? Yeah, I mean, should we just put on our altar of democracy, accountability is the sine qua non for democracy, right? Just holding accountable. And there's a lot going on now. You know, Fannie Willis is brewing her indictments against the former guy that may be released, you know, July 31st, around then. We go, that's great. And state charges cannot be presidentially pardoned. Yes! Okay, that's good.
Right.
So... And then we're going to, in a few minutes, have our midpoint break, where we're replacing our usual break music with John Lewis, with Morgan Freeman reading John Lewis's last words. It's so moving. And I think that's just such a great nourishing of democratic ideals and the soul of this country, right? I mean, you love
well,
him.
It is. And the thing about John Lewis and Martin Luther King and Fannie Lou Hamer and all of those people was out of the depths of rejection that was inflicted on them by the American system and their ancestors back to 1619 has come this spiritual regeneration of the otherwise tainted phenomenon of American politics. That the John Lewis's of this world said, no, we're in the political world because it's absolutely necessary in order to facilitate justice for all. And we kind of thought, or the story was told in the newspapers, that, you know, under Obama, oh, great, now America solved its race problem, everything's doing wonderful, you know, just in time for John Roberts to come along and say, well, no, as a matter of fact, we do think that racial healing has happened so much that we don't have to watch how the South conducts elections anymore. We're done with supervising electoral mechanisms, and there has been nothing but continuous assaults on the mechanisms of American elections ever since that Supreme Court decision. And it's a conscious part, I assert, is a conscious part of the Republican plan for voter suppression. Keep the vote in the cities and the suburbs down so that the votes in the boonies count more. And, you know, the joke is that Republicans get votes everywhere nobody lives, and Democrats get vote everywhere everybody lives. And it's political chicanery that has kept the urban areas from their full weight, electoral weight, being exercised. And that chicanery is not only conducted on a legal level, it's conducted on a psychological warfare level, which, you know, brings us back to Robert Kennedy Jr. Assault on democracy.
We're going to come right back to that. And we have John Lewis read by Morgan Freeman. And in the words that you taught me also a long time ago, Jamie, in the words of Isaiah, speak to the weary a word that will rouse them. And here's John Lewis speaking to our souls. Here we go.
While my time here has now come to an end, I want you to know that in the last days and hours of my life, you inspired me. You filled me with hope about the next chapter of the great American story when you used your power to make a difference in our society. Millions of people motivated simply by human compassion laid down the burdens of division. Around the country and the world, you set aside race, class, age, language, and nationality to demand respect for human dignity. That is why I had to visit Black Lives Matter Plaza in Washington, though I was admitted to the hospital the following day. I just had to see and feel it for myself that after many years of silent witness, the truth is still marching on. Emmett Till was my George Floyd. He was my Rayshard Brooks, Sandra Bland, and Breonna Taylor. He was 14 when he was killed, and I was only 15 years old at the time. I will never, ever forget the moment when it became so clear that he could easily have been me. In those days, fear constrained us like an imaginary prison, and troubling thoughts of potential brutality committed for no understandable reason were the bars. Though I was surrounded by two loving parents, plenty of brothers, sisters, and cousins, their love could not protect me from the unholy oppression waiting just outside that family circle. Unchecked, unrestrained violence and government-sanctioned terror had the power to turn a simple stroll to the store for some Skittles or an innocent morning jog down a lonesome country road into a nightmare. If we are to survive as one unified nation, we must discover what so readily takes root in our hearts that could rob Mother Emanuel Church in South Carolina of her brightest and best, shoot unwitting concertgoers in Las Vegas, and choke to death the hopes and dreams of a gifted violinist like Elijah McClain. Like so many young people today, I was searching for a way out, or some might say a way in. And then I heard the voice of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. on an old radio. He was talking about the philosophy and discipline of nonviolence. He said we are all complicit when we tolerate injustice. He said it is not enough to say it will get better by and by. He said each of us has a moral obligation to stand up, and speak out. When you see something that is not right, you must say something. You must do something. Democracy is not a state. It is an act. And each generation must do its part to help build what we call the beloved community. A nation and world society at peace with itself. Ordinary people with extraordinary vision can redeem the soul of America by getting in what I call good trouble, necessary trouble. Voting and participating in the democratic process are key. The vote is the most powerful nonviolent change agent you have in a democratic society. You must use it because it is not guaranteed. You can lose it. You must also study and learn the lessons of history because humanity has been involved in this soul-wrenching existential struggle for a very long time. People on every continent have stood in your shoes through decades and centuries before you. The truth does not change, and that is why the answers worked out long ago can help you find solutions to the challenges of our time. Continue to build union between movements stretching across the globe, because we must put away our willingness to profit from the exploitation of others. Though I may not be here with you, I urge you to answer the highest calling of your heart and stand up for what you truly believe. In my life, I have done all I can to demonstrate that the way of peace, the way of love and nonviolence, is the more excellent way. Now it is your turn to let freedom ring. when historians pick up their pens to write the story of the 21st century. Let them say that it was your generation who laid down the heavy burdens of hate at last, and that peace finally triumphed over violence, aggression, and war. So I say to you, walk with the wind, brothers and sisters, and let the spirit of peace and the power of everlasting love be your guide.
That was Morgan Freeman reading John Lewis's last words to us, so composed. It always makes me weep, because it's so powerfully resonant, you know. And I was sort of taking notes of the beautiful, beautiful things he said, and so coherent, you know, in the great tradition of final words passed on, you know, so lucid. But I have these notes. I'm so glad he listed so many people, from Emmett Till to Elijah McClain to Sandra Bland. But I'm moving myself, so I'm going to hand it back to you, Jamie, because I find it so moving and so inspiring and so rousing us to be dedicated, right? And he says he's done all he can. To do all we can. It's like John O'Donohue saying, you know, this new beginning has been waiting for all of us. You know, this time is uncertain, but, you know, enter into the new life, you know, holding nothing back. And it's like, what would that mean, to hold nothing back? But do you have responses or favorite lines of John Lewis being read by Morgan Freeman? Oh, good.
Yes. I think it was when he was quoting Dr. King, but the idea that if we are complicit in injustice, we do this by inaction. We don't have to actually agree with the Confederacy. But if we don't take action against the Confederacy, we're letting them win. And that just is not right for human beings in general. And it's not right for the United States. I mean, Lincoln said that the original sin of America was slavery, and he was right. And we almost, had he lived, got to dealing with decompensating from slavery, but we didn't get to deal with it. And the result was the Klan, and or the three Klans, the Klan of 1876, the Klan of 1920, and the current Klan that started in the 1960s. And now, of course, they've proceeded beyond the Klan, and they have other names for it, such as the Federalist Society. But it's the same thing. And so people on the team of life do not collaborate with the Confederate project of extirpating individual liberty in, quote, undesirable people, unquote, who you can tell who's undesirable. They look very feminine, or they look very black, or they look very brown, or they look very yellow. And they don't have the best shoes in the world, and they don't have the best cars. And, you know, it's an imperialist vision. And in 1968, we consciously started a movement to try to proceed beyond the American empire. And that was what animated both Gene McCarthy and Robert Kennedy Sr. in 1968, was the almost reluctant realization that the American empire that emerged from World War II and embarked on the folly in Vietnam, which was basically just inheriting the disused parts of the French Empire, which we thought we were going to do on the cheap, and it didn't work out too good. You know, we had to move beyond that way of thinking and start becoming more inclusive in how the goods and services of America were distributed. And John Lewis had something to say about that, which I didn't make an exact note of, but it was it was kind of to the effect of if we don't get to work on economic justice, which means economic rearrangement of how late capitalism is allowed to function, if we're not working on that, we're not getting anywhere. And the rot is going to continue. So the proposition of the reform wing of the Democratic Party in my lifetime, in addition to civil rights, was anti-war. And the reason is war corrupts your thinking. I remember you saying during the first Iraq war that you made a mistake one day. You were in a hurry, and you ate McDonald's. And that all of a sudden, for 3 days, you understood the war in Iraq.
No, I had no, I had no problem with American foreign policy.
And you didn't understand it anymore. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah, no, no, that's the Gurdjieffian level system, which is very fun about negative 6,000 is superstitious, whatever, negative, you know, 3,000 is societal conditioning, negative 1,500 is king ego, I'm better than everybody. You know, it's people spend their whole life on it, and I'm breezing through. But there are people, conversations, you know, that feed different levels, and it's a witty system, right? Because then it gets to negative 768, theoretical mastery, negative 384, suicidal depression, negative 192, suicidal depression, 96, remorse, like I've been terrible, and then clarity. Right, so it's witty on a number of levels, but yes, because the more psychotic you're becoming, you're actually rising up, and the numbers refer to the number of laws one is subject to when vibrating at that level. So everything can be practiced on those levels: astrology, politics, right, consensus, superstition, king ego, theoretical mastery, or being agents of principles rather than subject to laws, because kind of the thing. But yeah, that was my joke to myself. It's like there's food that vibrates at those levels, and I ate a McDonald's in whatever it was, 1968, and yeah, for 3 days I had no problem with our foreign policy, because I was in group, the imprisoning of group mind, where there are 3,000 laws, right, you know, pouring into our living rooms through TV or whatever the thing is. So it's useful. I think that's useful. So yeah, thank you for bringing that part up. And we are in America's Pluto return now, and you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. You don't need astrology to feel the thing. It's Pluto, death, rebirth, is where it was when this country was founded, and it's humming in our chart now. And it's as though Pluto says, you can have a democracy, or, you know, try one. That would be a good idea, but only if you look at everything. Only if you look at everything, right? As John Lewis, you know, guides so wonderfully, you know, the powerful beauty, and he says, you know, all are complicit when we tolerate injustice, you know, and when you dedicate to democracy, then we are serving, he says, the beloved community, you know, of ordinary good people, you know, it's so beautiful, and to keep those really, the power of long-term dedication. You know, and you bring up 1968, which is extremely important. That's the, for everything you say and everything that people know, it's the what's called the Uranus-Pluto conjunction, of, you know, death and rebirth and experimentation, right? That, and now I think of 1968, the 60s, those born then, those who lived then, those who've been influenced by the 60s culture, as a positive sleeper cell that's coming alive now. Uranus and Jupiter, I'm just trying to, so to finish what was begun then, because, you know, Eugene McCarthy rally in 1968, I was a 14-year-old or something, but I wept at his goodness, yeah, and then you worked with him later in the quirky 1976 one, where I think quirky ally David Farrelly, that somebody described as a combination Charles Manson, St. Francis figure that was in our lives at the time, and Farrelly and I were running the Nobody for President campaign. Nobody can help us. Nobody has ethics. Nobody whatever, you know, as a brief thing. And then, But then, you know, and I think we were even trying to get, you know, this was fairly, I don't think you or Eugene was in cahoots with this. We were trying to get Dick Gregory to run with Eugene McCarthy. It was just a, and anyway, so there's that. But Shel, do you want to homage Eugene McCarthy just for a moment or whatever, just to pull up something that was very wonderful?
Well, I want to continue the work. Okay,
yes.
That McCarthy did, which was he basically said in 67 that the war in Vietnam is the Democrats' problem because they have the majority and they voted all the money. And so the Democratic Party has a political duty to resolve this problem that we brought on our country. And, you know, they went to they, meaning the anti-war organizers, they went to Bill Fulbright, Senator Fulbright of Arkansas. They went to Senator Kennedy of New York. They went to a couple of other people whose names I don't know. And they eventually got around to Gene, and Gene said, well, if nobody's going to do it, I'll do it. We need to challenge this policy from within the Democratic Party. And Lyndon Johnson ran away with it, ran away from it as soon as Gene got 35%. In what was intended to be a fixed coronation in the New Hampshire primary. And so the anti-imperial project that was what Dean McCarthy and Robert Kennedy Sr. were running on in 1968 was a logical extension of the anti-slavery project, otherwise known in the 1960s as civil rights. And now, thanks to Jimmy Carter, known as human rights in general. And we recognize that the United States of America does not practice human rights towards its own least economically fortunate. And that's an attribute of late-stage capitalism. And there's a lot of money trying to keep it the way it is. And we will not survive as a country if we keep doing business as usual, because that will run itself into the ground. So we're now in, we are continuing both projects, the anti-slavery project and the anti-imperialism project, in the face of serious opposition from within the Democratic Party, not to mention within the Republican Party, who has no interest whatever in either of those propositions. So that's where we stand today, and that's the universe that everybody who's breathing now has to work with. And as, you know, John Lewis reminded us, you can either collaborate with the repression project or you can take action. And so everybody needs to be taking some action some of the time in the, what was that, beloved community direction.
Yeah.
And so the people who practice bodily wholeness and spiritual outreach and all of those good things are called upon, as Eugene McCarthy called upon us in 68, to stand up and do something. I mean, maybe you got kids and you're busy and all of that, but do something, because
well, yeah, no,
the consequences of not doing anything are too horrible to contemplate. Go ahead.
Right. No, that's absolutely true. And the Pluto return, everything's back. I'm impressed by Rachel Maddow's Deja News, and yes, everybody's befoible. Yes, she treated Bernie terribly. She's done terrible, but now she's doing great work. Again, we want complexity. Oh, team, you know, complexity. This, that, terrible. But Deja News is an educational project. It's a brilliant podcast, as is her history of right-wing Nazis in America called Ultra, that there was a planned coup against FDR, right? And there were paid, this is for real, people on the Nazi payroll in Congress, you know, into the 50s, you know, or in the 40s and 50s. These are things to know about. When you brought up the Klan, right, You know, and Rachel Maddow said, here's Moms for America, which is a right-wing terrorist group, really. And I love some wag on Facebook called them Planned Karenhood. And it's like, oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. It was just somebody way back in the mix, offhand comment, but Planned Karenhood is really a great thing. Yeah, in Oklahoma, the educational right wing wants to teach about the Tulsa race riot without mentioning race. You know, it's like it's a conniption fit inducing, right. You know, everywhere. Right. Like, so how do we metabolize conniption fits, you know? And then just for all of us to go, you know, a vision of unity, excellent. Does it actually create division? You know, there we go. About everything, is this the thing or the symbol the thing? Because it's all stirring, right? I mean, so 1968 is sort of what we're we're doing here. And there's Roger Stone and Dirty Tricks and, you know, on to almost, well, we've covered a number of the elections there. Right, and it's all in play, right? And it's all, you know, complex, and we do want a unifying vision, but not to be hoodwinked and bamboozled. There we go. That's part of the thing, you know. And I guess the blessing, it's my exit line from, you know, potential polarity when addressing QAnon adjacent kinds of people. Going, may we all awaken tomorrow self-possessed rather than merely possessed, right? And it's a good exit line because everybody likes that and thinks it refers to themselves, which is fine, right? As in any effective blessing, that's a good one. And that's part of, you know, what we want to kind of pour forth at this dark of the moon, you know, a blessing. And John Lewis really gave us such a composed blessing, and to have used his last hours of breathing to compose that missive to our hearts, you know, is so powerful. Let me toss to you just there's beautiful symmetry, and I just think that, you know, that this show for it's 27 years in September, Jamie, is like, I remember it, holy moly. But the wedding of spiritual, dedicated, you know, collaborative magic is simply a willingness to collaborate with everything, you know, and dedicated social action. And that's the combination, you know, that's winning. So there are beautiful symmetries now, you know, Venus rising in the east in California at 27 degrees of Leo, Neptune at 27 Pisces. We just love pattern tracking. It's a Leo-Pisces conversation, meaning it's not Leo, for all of us, performance. It's deep, dedicated magic to animate the unifying vision truly, truly, you know, that we're all in this together, and it forms what's called a finger of destiny to Pluto. So we say the positive prayers and images are eager to incarnate it into actuality. So much of what you say, you know, and feel free to continue, you know, is eager, you know, your words, your precision, your history, you know, is eager to incarnate into actuality. So given that, and then, well, let me pause there, any way you want to dance back, and then I have a number of other characters.
Well, I think that's true for all of us, right? We are called at this time and place the remedy to public toxicity is clarity within. If I'm grounded on my own two feet and not being blown sideways by all the multiple tornadoes of normal urban life, then I'm immunized against deliberate attempts at confusion. Because I see myself as grounded in this universe at this time and this place, with this spirit within me, with that spirit without and around me, that everybody has, that we all know through beauty and music and art and, you know, I mean, that is all part of the spirit world. The unquantifiable. You and I have had discussions about the need for reverent science in the 21st century and subsequent centuries. And the deal is that the more integrated an individual can become with his own or her own internal energies, perceptions, and spiritual gifts, the more you can do in this world. What you need to do, and things that you didn't know you needed to do, but there they are in front of you, and you go, oh, well, maybe I ought to look into doing something about that if I want to be all the way here. I mean, so these kinds of going within in order to become without are, you know, that's a spiritual story that's told in all the ancient languages about all the different peoples and their, you know, not just their religions, but their cultures. And once again, because we are human, we participate in that. Because we're here now, we participate in it now. And in terms of public being a public participant, it's like I understood that this was the motto of the Jews who escaped from the Warsaw Ghetto in World War II, and they're out in the forest and they're trying to figure out how to resist most efficiently. And they say, "If not us, who? If not that's now, when?"
When?
You're talking about the astrological signs that are saying we are standing at such a moment in American history right now. Go ahead.
That's it. No, we're on our way out all too soon, but that's a good exit line, you know, and that's when physics and metaphysics get married, they have a child named Reverend Science. That's so wonderful. Thanks always, Jamie Yeager, and thank you always, Kirsten Thomas. I'm Caroline Casey, starting a Dream Council on Tuesday, coyotenetworknews.com, to find out more about everything and ways to play. Thank you, team. We will reconvene next week. Thanks again, Jamie.
Thank you. Coyote.